What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 87. Today, we're going to be doing something a little different. We've been talking about nutrition and health stuff for maybe the past, 20 episodes, doing a whole series on the ketogenic diet and how low carb can help with a bunch of different health ailments. But today, we kind of wanted to get back to really both of our first loves, and that's training, you know, specifically weightlifting. That's something I love to do. I still do it every day. Tom does it as well. So we just want to do a podcast on something called BFR, or blood flow restriction training. So it's a technique that is a little different, a little unique, and we wanted to break it down and just show you the benefits of it. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So Tom, how's your week been? Probably still boring, I assume.
Yeah, the only thing that's new with me is, so the 100-mile race I was going to do in June, it got pushed back till September. And they're still not sure if they're going to do it or not, but they just recently added a function where you can sign up for it and then just pay later instead of having to pay right away. So since they did that, I finally officially signed up for it last week, and now I've been stepping up my training and getting my diet back dialed in, finding that extra motivation to start training for it again.
Got it. That's cool.
Yeah, I didn't want to sign up and then have it get canceled, because a lot of people are not giving their money back for a lot of races like that, because the races will buy all the equipment and everything like that, so they don't have the money to refund you. Mm-hmm. And this is a couple $100, so I didn't want to just be out a couple $100 just for the hell of it, just so I could push it back till next year or whatever the race is going to do. So I'm really glad they added that function.
Yeah, that's smart of them. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I heard there was some keto conference. I think one of the big keto con. It's a low carb conference. I think it's in Denver, or maybe that's a carnivore one. I'm not sure, but they didn't offer people refunds, and they canceled the whole thing. So people were out hundreds of dollars.
Well, I don't know what they're doing specifically, but most likely they're probably just offering you free tickets to next year's event.
Oh, okay. I would hope that'd be cool. That'd be the right thing to do.
That's what most of the races are doing, so I would assume pretty much everybody's doing that. But yeah, most places just, they don't even have the money to refund you, mm-hmm. which kind of sucks, but that does suck. That's the situation a lot of people are in.
Yeah, that's the reality of it for sure. Yeah, as far as me, man, nothing new on my side, same old stuff. I've the only thing that really changed this week was I started doing BFR again, or the topic of the podcast today, blood flow restriction training. I kind of got away from it the past few months, just because you know how it is, man. It's hard to teach an old dog new tricks, and I'm just used to lifting weights. So using this new equipment, sometimes it just falls out of your routine,
Yeah, definitely. I haven't even tried this before. I do see where I would try it, but I just haven't been in those situations. I think it's perfect. If you're recovering from an injury, yeah. I think this is probably the best type of training you could be doing. If you're doing a lot of traveling and you just don't have access to a state-of-the-art gym or just a lot of stuff in general, or if you're stuck at home right now during this quarantine, it's kind of perfect for that. But shit, outside is my workout. That's my gym. Is I'm running outside. I have a pull-up bar and some dumbbells at home, so I'm good. I can be creative enough with that, so I don't really need to resort to stuff like this. But yeah, I think it's definitely perfect if you're either doing some traveling or recovering from injury.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this quarantine helped me kind of just remember about this training. And a lot of people are stuck at home. A lot of gyms are closed, or shit, all the gyms are closed. So a lot of people have bands at the house. Not too many people have a full home gym like I do. But even with bands, this BFR technique can make bands way more effective because it makes things way more extreme, way more stress on the body that your body can actually still grow. A lot of everyone, at least all my gym bros out there, are worried about losing their gains during this quarantine. So this technique is, I really like it. I've done it, I think maybe I started a year ago. It was the first time I tried it. And it's fallen in and out of my routines over the course of the last year. Every time I do it, I like it. Every time I do it, I'm like, why did I stop doing this? Like, I always wanted to be a part of my routine. But like I said, sometimes you just get into like caveman mode and you just start lifting plates and dumbbells. You don't even think about the extra stuff. But yeah, it's great. You can do this in a home quarantine, home gym. All you need is bands. So listen up if that's what you're in, the situation you're in. I guess we're all in that situation right now, you know? But I really wanted to do this podcast and just talk about, does BFR work? And if it does, how should people do it properly? So I want to break down the protocol and I want to break down the science behind really what's going on, you know?
Yeah. Before we do that, some other names for this, besides just BFR, blood flow restriction training, are they going to be KAATSU training? That's like the Japanese name for it. You can buy KAATSU bands. Many times we're just looking them up. They're like $900 for the full set, so they're really expensive. That's like the most state-of-the-art version of it. And what's the other form of it? Like occlusion?
Occlusion training, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really know it by that name. I've read it a few times, but yeah, occlusion training, blood flow restriction training, or KAATSU training, they all mean the same thing.
All mean the same thing, yeah, exactly. So just to break down really, I guess, the mechanism of action, what really happens, you can think of it like, stress is what changes our body. That's what we're doing in the gym. We're stressing our body out. We want to stress our body to a point that it's forced to change. We want to give our body the signal that what it's currently working with, like that either that muscular strength or cardiovascular strength, endurance, isn't enough, right? So we break down our body in the gym. We say, hey, we need to get stronger so we can handle this stress better next time. That's the whole point in the gym. That's what we're trying to do. So all BFR does is it just increases that intensity of that signal, that stress signal. It applies that increased stress over a very short period of time to induce growth, and it really works. So specifically, what BFR is a training method that partially restricts arterial inflow and fully restricts venous outflow in a particular working muscle. And it does this with a tourniquet system. And most people know what a tourniquet is. Like if you get a gunshot in your calf, you're going to wrap your quad really tight to block blood flow, put a tourniquet on it, right? So you can think of it like most people, if you have a home gym and you just have a band, you can wrap a band really tight around your upper arm, kind of like in your armpit shoulder area, and it'll block blood flow through your arm. That's what we're talking about. That's what this system is. You wrap tourniquets around your upper arms or your upper legs. I specifically have a set of, they're kind of nylon bands with numbers on the sides, and I can wrap them around my arm, and they have Velcro, so I can get the same number on both arms, so I get the same amount of pressure, and that's what I recommend people have. I did start out just with normal bands I would just tie around my legs, and that's kind of the poor man's version. It works, 100% works, but it's hard to get the same amount of pressure on both extremity. At least with the bands or these nylon straps that have numbers, you can get the same number on both arms, so you know you're getting the same amount of pressure. And like Tom said, they're called KAATSU. What do they call it? KAATSU bands?
Yeah, KAATSU bands.
KAATSU bands. Those are that's a gold standard, because those are pretty much like blood pressure cuffs, and they'll give you a measurement for the pressure, and you can dial it in specifically, like very specifically, and the pressure is around your entire arm in a uniform fashion. So if you want to do it right, really, really right, get the KAATSU bands. If you have $1,000 to blow, go ahead and do it. I personally don't, and I don't care enough. I just know that when I put these bands on my arms, I obviously block blood flow, so I'm doing something. But that's really all it is. It's just designed to limit blood flow to the muscle, but it almost completely blocks blood flow away from the muscle. So that compression results in hypoxia or low blood oxygen in the working muscle, and also results in blood pooling within the capillaries of the occluded body part. And obviously, I'm so white, if anybody knows me, you know I'm very fair skinned. This can be seen visually, especially in me. Like I did it this morning for triceps and my arms were blue, 100%. And actually it gets kind of worrying, but you know, it is a complete safe training method, but your arms will completely change color. And it's very painful, but it is safe. Like that hypoxia and blood pooling, those might seem dangerous, and visually you will see a difference. But those things already happen in the muscles you work out. Like that burning sensation you feel when you're like doing bicep curls, that's when oxygen is limited, because usually oxygen is a limiting variable in a lot of these situations. And your body is relying on glycolysis, and so that's low blood oxygen, just what it is. And that pump you feel when you lift weights is increased blood flow to the working muscle. So these signals happen normally when you're lifting weights. It's just heightened, you know, 10x when you do BFR.
Yeah, so it's pretty much just making like your mild workout go to like a level 10. It's just like increasing the intensity of the exercise on your, or increasing the stress, making it feel like a moderate exercise is the most intense exercise you've ever done in your life.
Yeah, exactly. And we talked about it, you know, a lot of people want to go to the gym for 3 hours because they think the amount of time you're in the gym equates to work. But really, you want to go to the gym for an hour max and just completely kill yourself. And if you can do it in 30 minutes, go ahead and do it in 30 minutes. You want to completely just exhaust yourself as fast as possible. It's about intensity. It's about effort. It's not about the amount of hours you're in the gym. And like I said, BFR has been shown to be completely safe. It's a common concern that a clot might form during this form of training. You know, obviously you're blocking blood flow. You're thinking like, what if you get a clot? But it's been shown that clot formation really doesn't occur. And here's a quote from a study I pulled, and I'm going to put it on the website. It's a study called Blood Flow Restriction Exercise, Considerations and Methodology, Application and Safety. So it's on the website if you want to check it out. It's a really thorough study. But here's a quote from it. It says, the totality of the literature reveals minimal adverse events pertaining to VTE, which is a blood clot. Clinically reported events have not been reported, end quote. So there's really no concern for blood clots. They haven't been reported. And this training method has been done in Japan for years, so by a lot of people. If blood clots were something that was common, it would have happened 100%. And another common concern is like weightlifters suffer from something called rhabdomyolysis sometimes. That's a like extreme breakdown of muscle. And really what that does is muscle breaks down to protein in our blood. And then that protein, those amino acids go to our kidneys and it completely smokes our kidneys. And that can kill you. It really can. It's really bad. But it only happens if you're like a, I don't know, like a CrossFitter who works out 12 hours a day. Do you know anybody who's had rhabdo before?
I've heard of it. I don't know if I have or not.
Okay.
Because like the way you can tell is if you have like really dark urine. Like, not quite like blood, but kind of like a brownish color.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, there's a couple of things that it's either, like, extreme exercise, or it could be, like, extreme exercise and a combination of, like, dehydration. Like, there's a couple of things that could be, like, causing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, the easiest way to kind of tell is if you have, like, really dark urine, like, hey, you should probably go to the hospital because it can be fatal. So, during wrestling season back in my high school days, I mean, I was constantly combining the two. You know, cutting weight, so like extremely dehydrated, and on top of that, like running 10 miles a day, going through 2 to 3 hours of wrestling practice. I mean, I was doing like the most extreme stuff you can do for like a dehydration standpoint and an exercise standpoint. So maybe, I know I've definitely had a lot of like dark urine. I just assumed it was always dehydration until I learned about rhabdo.
Yeah.
So possibly, I just don't know. I mean, luckily it wasn't fatal for me.
Yeah, luckily if it did happen, it was mild enough where your body recovered, thank God, you know?
Yeah, I was just young enough, and my kidneys were in good enough health that they were able to handle it.
Yeah. I know there's a female bodybuilder out there called Dana Lynn Bailey, I think that's her full name. Do you know who that is?
No, I don't.
No, I think she was a first Mrs. like figure Olympia, I think. And I mean, she's obviously jacked. But she suffered from it fairly recently. She ended up in the hospital. So it really is a serious thing. And if it's caused by extreme stress in the gym or extreme working out, it would make sense that this technique where you strap some bands around your extremities, you know, your arms or your legs, and your arms go purple, people are like, oh, you're putting a bunch of stress on your body. So it seems logical that this might produce rhabdomyolysis more frequently, but it doesn't. It hasn't been shown to. So here's a quote about that. While exertional rhabdomyolysis during blood flow restriction training exercise is possible, because you know it's possible in any training, evidence does not currently suggest that the risk is inflated compared to traditional exercise, end quote. So it's saying, you know, yeah, do BFR all day, every day, and maybe that'll happen, but that's true for any exercise. You know, you just have to listen to your body and not be dumb about it.
Yeah, I was really surprised when I came across like the actual numbers of rhabdomyolysis. I thought that it could have like a slight increase, like maybe like a 2 to 5% increase, which just wouldn't be statistically relevant. Mm-hmm. But it's like 0.2%. And if you actually look at the studies from the CATSU training, those are like the type of training that's been done the longest. It's like at 0.007%, something extremely low. So yeah, it's pretty much the same chance of getting rhabdo from BFR training as any other type of training. And I was really shocked by that. I thought there'd be a slight increase.
But yes, me too.
None at all.
Yeah, me too. I knew this training was effective just from, you know, listening to people's opinions that I respect, but it does seem extreme. And I'm so damn white, my arms change completely different colors. It looks dangerous, but I'm happy to hear that it's really not, you know, thank goodness.
Yeah, and it's pretty much just turning like your warm up into like your most intense like sets. Like that's kind of what it's doing. So I figured it'd be really easy for a lot of people to overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you try to turn this into like a normal workout session while you have these bands on, like you're completely going to overdo it. And there's a lot of like crazy people that will do that type of training, and I'm really surprised like the evidence hasn't supported that.
Yeah, no, me too.
I mean, but probably the people that are crazy enough to do that type of training probably aren't the people that are rushing to the hospital either.
Yeah, that's true. They're like some David Goggins just dying in a bathtub somewhere.
Yeah, that's exactly what popped into my mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, BFR is safe 100%, but is it effective? And it is. There are studies showing that BFR does in fact work. Increases in muscle hypertrophy, which is muscle size and muscle strength have been measured in as little as 3 weeks. So it's just, and it makes sense if you just think about the basic concepts of working out stresses your body, the stress induces growth. And if you increase that stress, it's going to increase the growth. It makes sense. So it has been shown to work, and that's really cool. But it's just, there's a lot of, I don't know, misinformation out there, like as far as the protocols to use. So I'm just going to give you the protocol that I really use. And just to go down to how tight you should make the cuff, the recommended pressure for BFR exercise is 40 to 80% of AOP or arterial occlusion pressure. And that's a pressure it takes to 100% block your arteries. And you don't want to do that. Like you want blood flow into the arm or the leg, but you want the venous return to be blocked because you need blood just to get the muscle moving. If you don't have any supply, any fuel at all to your muscle, good luck holding that band very long. It's going to be very painful. You're not going to be able to do it. Your leg will just go numb. Your arm will just go numb. So 40 to 80% of AOP, again, arterial occlusion pressure, which is, it's uncomfortable. Like you want it to be tight, but not so tight that you can't hold it for more than a few minutes.
So what does it feel like? Does it feel like when you're at the doctor and you're getting your blood pressure? Like, is that what it feels like, that?
Yeah. Think of it like the max. Yeah, when it's at its tightest, think of that and then maybe like 10% more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And so the cuff size varies, but you really want to, it can be any size, to be honest, as the whole point is that you're just blocking blood flow. But really, if you get something bigger than a few inches, it's going to be hard to move that muscle through the range of motion. So getting a band or a nylon strap that's an inch, inch and a half across is really going to be ideal. So that's as big as a band should be. And like Tom said earlier, it's this type of workout, it's like making your warm-up the most intense set of your entire workout. Because what you want to do, you want to use lightweight. You do not use heavy weight with this exercise at all. You want to use lightweight with a full range of motion and focus on the squeeze, that mind-muscle connection. Like, for example, this week for biceps, I did easy curl bar, which is, you know, just like classic bicep curls for BFR. And I used 20 pounds on both sides. And that maybe some people out there don't have a frame of reference, but if I really wanted to go heavy, I could easily triple that. But using 20 pounds allows me to do a bunch of reps, but also focus on the squeeze and the full range of motion. So really you want to use about 20 to 40% of your one rep maximum. And that's been shown to be effective to induce muscle growth. And like I said, with these light weights, you want to use high reps. So the good rep range is 75 total repetitions across 4 sets. So the first set, you do 30 reps, then you rest for either 30 to 60 seconds, then you do 15 reps, rest again, 30 to 60 seconds, rest, 15 reps, then you rest, then 15 reps again. So it's a total of 75 reps. The first set, 30 reps. The second, third, and fourth set are going to be 15 reps. And the thing is, I initially did this training for my quads. So I would wrap bands around my upper legs, and I would do this with goblet squats. And it's easy when we're sitting here on a table, like I'm at a kitchen table right now doing this, and you know, everybody's comfortable, we're cool, say, okay, do this sit, do these sets, and then rest for 60 seconds. But when you're actually in like the dungeon lifting these weights, I'm telling you, it is extremely, extremely painful. And especially for your quads, especially for these really big muscle groups. So what, just imagine you do a set. Anyone who's lifted weights and understands, or even run, you understand that when you exert yourself, your muscles hurt, right? Either your lungs hurt from running or your muscles hurt from exercising. But once you're done doing that set and you put the weights down, your body gets a break. But now with BFR, you would do a set, you put the weights down, and you're still in that very, that same pain that you were on the last rep. The pain doesn't go away. And then you have to hold it for a minute. The pain doesn't go away. And then you have to do a whole another set again. So you're in that real dark zone in your mind where it's extremely uncomfortable, it's extremely painful, and you just have to go through it. So honestly, I say I rest 60 seconds. I rarely actually get to 60 seconds. If I can get to 45, I'm good, and then I just go. So you want to do at least 30 seconds in between sets. If you can do a minute, you should. Of course, you increase the intensity, you increase that, what do you call it, stress to the muscle, you will get better results, but good luck. You know, it's easy to talk about it here. It's harder to do it when you're actually, you know, in the gym, you know?
Yeah, that sounds pretty painful.
Mm-hmm. It's way easier for your arms. Like, for your arms, it's almost enjoyable because you just get a very, very extreme pump. And it's still uncomfortable. But for your legs, it's like unbearable. At least it is for me. Maybe my like lactic acid threshold is very low. I'm not sure, but I hate it for my quads. It's something I like dread doing. But honestly, if you dread doing something, you know you're doing something right. It's that uncomfortable shit that makes us grow. So that's really what it's about.
So have you ever noticed any like lightheadedness from this? I mean, I know you're just restricting blood flow to your limbs, so I'm just wondering if that affects like your blood flow kind of throughout the body.
No, I haven't. Mm-mm.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
I didn't see that anywhere. I was just kind of curious.
Yeah. So you can do this about 2 to 3 times per week. That's the ideal kind of marker for this. And one of the benefits of this is the amount of soreness you feel after these workouts is minimal. And that can kind of get to your head because as far as, you know, most gym bros out there, they measure their success in the gym by their soreness the next day. If they're not sore, they don't think they've worked out. But muscle soreness is just one marker of damage. It's not the only one, and it's not even the best one, especially if you're a trained athlete. Getting sore is, or at least really, really sore, is a rare thing, but you're still putting in work, you're still adapting, you're still getting better. So you're able to do this training method 2 to 3 times a week because, like, you can do it Monday, Wednesday, Friday for biceps, triceps, whatever, quads, and you won't be that sore, so you will be recovered by the next day to do it again. So it's one of the benefits of it, and I've noticed it myself, that I don't really get that sore from these training sessions.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that could be a little misleading, though. I could definitely see somebody trying to do this 5 times a week, 7 times a week, if they're not getting sore.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you did it 7 times a week, it might be a problem, but... You know, hey, let them figure it out, you know what I mean? They wake up one day and their piss is completely black, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure if you do it 2 days in a row, you'll feel some level of soreness.
I would assume so. Your muscle weakness, at least, you wouldn't be as strong.
Yeah, definitely. You get some sort of signal, some sort of feedback to, hey, stop doing this.
You'd have to. Yeah, and you have to be smart enough to listen to it. But so this training method, I've only done it personally for weightlifting. That's all I really want to do. I do cardio. I have to force myself to do cardio. But you can do it for aerobic training as well. You know, it's not just good for weightlifting. But the key thing, again, is not to go too hard. So you want to train under 50% of VO2 max with the same pressure as before, so 40 to 80% of occlusion pressure. and you can increase the restriction time to 5 to 20 minutes per exercise. So honestly, this is an easy way to spice up those boring-ass long cardio sessions. So maybe instead of going for a 30-minute walk, you can do like an 8-minute BFR walk, something like that, you know?
Yeah, if I were going to incorporate this for like, you know, my my ultra training, like that's what I would do, is I would, when I walk my dogs, like on my like daily walk, I would, you know, incorporate in them when I'm just walking or maybe doing like a slow jog. I definitely wouldn't be using these for sprints or, you know, a 20-mile run, anything like that. But yeah, I think like that'd be the best time to use it if you are an endurance athlete. It's just like walking with them.
Yeah, and it's been shown to increase endurance. It's been shown to have benefits. So I think a lot of people, I don't know if a beginner should be doing this. I think you really should build your base, build that mind-muscle connection for, you know, the first couple years of your training, either in some sort of endurance training or weightlifting. But once you get, once you top out your kind of genetic potential, at least naturally, these little extra stimuluses that we can do, these other training methods you can do, I think really help max out your genetic potential. Like if you're walking around, you're 200 pounds, you've been training for 10 years, you're not gaining weight, maybe doing this can add a few more pounds to your physique. And anybody who works out knows, if you go from 200 pounds to 205 pounds and it's like quality muscle, your physique will look completely different. So it's just these little changes that I think are really cool. And obviously the studies are here, they're beneficial in their own way. And that's why I wanted to talk about it. So I don't know. I like it. I think you should try it at least, you know, once. I think, you know, just give it a shot, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's definitely perfect if you are somebody that travels all the time and you don't have access to a gym, or if you are short on time. Like we were just talking about how it's just like a 10 to 20 minute workout, you're getting the same effects as if you spend an hour in the gym. Or if you're recovering from injury, like so you can't put a lot of pressure on some like bones or joints. This is a good way of putting a lot of pressure on your muscle without adding like damage to your joints, bones, stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's a great benefit of it. Huge benefit.
The downside of the, well, not, I wouldn't really say it's a downside, but it's just, it doesn't substitute training altogether because it's not going to increase like bone density, like, you know, doing a heavy squat will. Because mm-hmm. you're just not sending those signals to your bones like, oh, hey, I'm lifting 400 pounds every day. You need to get bigger and stronger.
Exactly. And the way the system is, you're not going to do any like multi-joint lifts. You're not going to do any clean snatches, deadlift, squats. I mean, you could do squats, but most likely you're going to do biceps and triceps. That's really going to be the golden, you know, butter. I mean, bread and butter. But you could do like light squats for sure. But any like dynamic movements, you're really not going to do with this training method.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, all right, that's all I wanted to say about BFR. Hopefully you guys liked it. Kind of go back to our roots, weightlifting. You know, I love nutrition. I'm obsessed with nutrition, honestly. But I also, before this, I was obsessed with weightlifting. So, and I still do it every day. I just think it's extremely healthy and I love to do it. So wanted to get back to the roots a little bit. Did you have a tip of the week this week?
I feel like this whole thing was just about BFR training. So yeah, I would suggest everybody try it themselves. And you can get bands on Amazon for pretty cheap. If you don't want to spend like $900 on the Katsu bands, that would be the best way to do it. I mean, they're ranging from like $20 to $30, somewhere around there. I mean, you could spend basically as much as you want to. Do you remember how much you paid for yours?
Yeah, mine couldn't have been $20. So I got the cheapest ones, and they work fine. They're, I mean, they're definitely not the best, but I don't care. I just need something to put around my arm that cuts off the blood, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the Katsu ones, I think those are like electronically... like that's how you adjust the pressure on those, is like through electronics. So I mean, these are just kind of manual, so it's not going to be as precise, but it still looks like you can do a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. And they're definitely a lot better than using your resistance bands at home.
Yeah,
like, you know, the ones that you're using for curls and stuff like that.
For sure. I recommend getting some like nylon straps with some Velcro, some numbers. I don't, like I said, if you're really about that life, go ahead and spend the money, but I'm not doing it on those Katsu bands.
Yeah, those Katsu bands seem like if you own like maybe a chiropractic office or a physical therapy office, something like that, where you know you need state of the art equipment, it makes sense for that. But for your average everyday person, you know, your weekend warriors, it doesn't really seem like it's that much. You get that much added benefit from them.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe if you haven't already. You can find our podcast pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.